This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
So glad to have you back with us as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, and open innovation. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online and webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Exciting show today. We're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from someone a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program, and of course at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. Right now, though, to tell us about the lineup for today's show, here is Jack Bishop.
This is the Promise of Tomorrow on the Science News Radio Network. My name is Jack Bishop. You know, I keep hearing about this this thing called 3D printing, and I'm just old enough, I don't know about most of our listeners, but I'm just old enough to remember that the first things we did with copying machines was put your face down on that glass and take a print of that. But this is not what we're talking about today. Sarah Brazier is a lady who knows as much about 3D printing as anybody. She has worked in digital fabrication, including laser micro machining and 3D printing, since 1986. She is co-founder of the company known as Potomac Photonics. And Sarah retired in December of 1999 after the sale of the company, but returned this year as chief 3D printing officer to lead sales of in-house contract services and 3D system 3D printing product in the Mid-Atlantic states. We're talking to her from one of my favorite cities, the place I used to live years ago, Baltimore, Maryland. Sarah, thank you for being with us here on The Promise of Tomorrow.
It's my pleasure.
Now, I'm going to start things off real simply by asking you, what is 3D printing?
Well, 3D printing is just another kind of manufacturing process. So we have other kinds of processes such as subtractive things, machining and cutting and drilling, where you take away material. And 3D printing is a process where we add material. And the easiest analogy, although there's many different kinds of 3D printing, is to think of extrusion, and the simplest extrusion is cake decorating.
Ah.
So if you think about how when you make flowers on a cake, you're adding material, you're adding frosting, and the same thing with some of the extrusion-based systems, you're extruding material and building up something. There are other kinds of 3D printing where you're using different kinds of technologies, but it's all the basic idea where you add material, kind of like Play-Doh or adding clay or cake decorating, instead of taking away material.
Now, I thought, until looking at your resume, that 3D printing was the newest kid on the block, and yet it's been around since 86. Who came up with it, and how did they come up with it? And tell us a little bit about the background history.
3D printing was really invented by Chuck Hull, who is the founder of 3D Systems Corporation. He invented a process called stereolithography, where we used lasers to change the material composition of either a liquid or a powder and turn it into a solid part by building up layers. And Chuck invented that in 1983, so actually last year was the 30th anniversary of the invention of 3D printing. And since then, there have been many different kinds of things besides stereolithography, and 3D Systems actually sells a very wide range of 3D printing machines. So they sell very small tabletop, home desktop machines that are based on extrusion that are you can get at Staples, all the way up to production machines that are used to make all the hearing aids in the world now are made by 3D printing. So it's a very wide range of different technologies. No one 3D printer makes everything, so we have in 3D printing a lot of different kinds of ways that we do the process. And Chuck founded 3D Systems, and it has gone on to become the industry leader. And it's a... It seems new because a number of patents expired a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and it allowed a lot more companies to enter the space, and a lot of the makers and hackers who are where there's a big movement of people wanting to make things latched on to this technology, and that's getting a lot of the press attention. So I think it's just come into the news recently, although certainly many companies have used it for quite a number of years.
Now, this seems like it would have just tremendous application and implications. What are some of those implications of 3D printing? One day, are we going to have a 3D printed car coming down the assembly line?
Well, we already have major parts that are made for the automobile industry. There are basically three considerations when you use 3D printing over other technologies. At its current state, it's not the Star Trek replicator where you just press a button and anything will come out. It's in its early stages.
You mean I can't
and
get...
So
I can't get...
The three times that you use it is either for rapid prototyping,
uh-huh,
when you are trying to make something quickly. There are iterative design changes where you can try ideas and get something out right away as opposed to waiting for a mold or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The second time that you use 3D printing is for complex geometries. And so if we're adding up material, if we're building from the bottom up, we can make things in a way that you can't possibly machine. You can't possibly get a machine inside. And this has a lot of implications for the automotive and the aerospace industry because that allows us to make structures that have, for lack of a better word, kind of like a lattice inside. And so when you have these kinds of structures with a lot of air, you're now reducing weight substantially and then you're saving gas. So the airline industry, for example, Boeing 3D prints in metals their hinges for the overhead bins and their hinges for the tray tables. I've heard a number, and I want to say it's 20,000 parts on Boeing planes are 3D printed. And then the third time that we use 3D printing as a choice is for mass customization. So if I wanted to make a million of one thing that all look the same, molds are still the more economical way to go. But if you want to make a million of things that are each one is different, then 3D printing is absolutely the way to go because our process is a digital process, so it's all driven by a CAD file and can be modified for each part. So the big area that uses 3D printing for mass customization is the medical device industry. So all of the Invisalign braces are all 3D printed. The dentist takes a scan, ships the scan to Invisalign, to the corporation that makes these, and overnight they print each device specific to the teeth of the person in the file. All of the hearing aids are made that way. People are making guides for surgery for knee and hip replacement so that it cuts down on the amount of operating room time. And of course, the insurance companies are anxious to reduce costs, so that's valuable. And of course, it's easier on the patient. It's being used for prosthetics, and so when you fit the prosthetic, it now is specific to every contour and shape of the stump where it's being attached, and so there's less problems with infection due to rubbing and blisters and sores and that kind of thing. They also there's also a wonderful other aspect to that, in that people think it's so cool and you can make these complex geometries. So actually 3D Systems owns a company that makes prosthetics that are fashion statements, and there's one of their customers, and she has the made to match her outfits. So it really now is something where, instead of people trying to hide their ugly prosthetics, they're feeling good about them. Mm-hmm. And so it has just a lot of really broad implications.
Can you take 3D printing and match it up with other manufacturing processes?
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that my company does, we have worked in laser machining and micro CNC machining and 3D printing, for decades. And what we do is we choose the right tool for the job. Sometimes it's solely one, but often we will work together. So one of the things that we have done is we make microfluidic devices, and we will 3D print the substrate, and it's about the size of a microscope slide. And then we laser micro machine, because we cannot make feature sizes as small as we need, and we make channels that are in the 10 to 15 micron wide width. So there is the width of the is just too small for 3D printing. And we go back in and micro machine the channels where the fluids are then deposited for analysis. It's a lab on a chip kind of application. And that's just one example.
That's just one example. My goodness. Now, I've got to ask you then, is it green? Is the process, friendly to the to not only the economy, but to the ecology?
Well, yes, because, theoretically, you are adding materials so you don't have waste. And I don't have in front of me the numbers, but GE calculated some just phenomenal savings in material. And I want to say it was in the 70 or 80 or 90% range, because if you've ever been into a machine shop or with a, where they're drilling, there's on the ground, you're seeing all of these filings and all of these, the waste. And so you don't have that in 3D printing. In 3D printing, all of the material is utilized, and there's not waste. But that said, we're in our early stages, and if you're starting your design and you don't get it right, you do have waste. You end up at the beginning in the prototyping stage, perhaps throwing away designs that fail. And I certainly have had designs that turn into blobs instead of what they were supposed to be. But once you get the design codified, yes, it's quite green.
Because you said anybody that's ever been in a machine shop, and my stepdad was a machinist for 45 years, you walk in and you just see tons of stuff on the floor.
Yes.
And even if the amount of material not lost is only 50-60%, that is a phenomenal savings in comparison to conventional machining of parts.
Yes, it is. As I was saying, it isn't always the right tool for the job, but if it is the right tool for the design and for all the other parameters, it is an enormous savings. And you couple that with these complex geometries where you're able to save fuel, because you can make these parts very, very light, but equally strong, you start to look at quite a green technology.
I think it's kind of interesting that for those of us in the general public who are not part of the field, that we're just now beginning to hear about 3D printing, and it's been around, as you said, for over 30 years now. And the reason we're hearing about it is concerns about what it could be used for. What's the future looking like?
Well, I think a lot of those concerns come from things like the press talking about, you know, everyone having the ability to 3D print a gun in their garage.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening for quite a long time. The machines that are able to print guns are very expensive, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. So you're talking about a $40,000 machine by the guy in Texas whose name escapes me that did the first one. You know, not everybody's going to have those resources. Not everybody's going to have those design skills or that capability. So I think that, you know, we're hearing a lot of things that are alarming to people, I think, down the road. And I tend to doubt that it's going to be in my lifetime. You know, we will eventually get to the Star Trek replicator where you press a button and something pops out, whatever you want pops out. But I don't see that happening for, you know, a good 40 years. Right now, we have to have very specific machines to specific applications. So I can't, on my cute little home cube 3D printer from 3D Systems, I can't print metal. That's a quite expensive machine. That's the least expensive one that 3D Systems offers for metal, I think, is about $100,000. Which, if you're an industrial user, is very reasonable, but certainly not for home use. So I think that, you know, for right now, we still have to have multiple machines. We have to have some degree of design capability. You can get files. You can get files on the internet that you can then download to your printer. And I do that all the time. I made snowflake earrings for Christmas, and I found them on the internet. And you know, that was fun and easy, and I didn't have to spend a lot of time designing. I'm thinking that eventually we're going to have lots of replacement part files available to us, so that, you know, if someone chooses, if the do-it-yourselfers choose to, they can just print out a replacement part for the dishwasher or washer or dryer and do their repairs themselves. But I really don't see, you know, the idea of the Star Trek replicator happening for a while. And I do think what will happen is we will have more service bureaus, and our company does contract service work for pretty much, you know, across industries. And when someone needs something, we have the expertise both in 3D scanning and 3D printing and in a variety of digital fabrication capabilities where we can help people pull stuff together. And I think the service bureau is probably going to be more successful than in that interim period before we enter, you know, science fiction.
Now, you actually have a 3D printer at home, and you make things with it. Now, I have to ask this. How in the world did you get into this field? What prompted you to make a lifetime career out of looking at 3D printing?
Well, I really do more digital fabrication. So, I mean, I have a 3D printer at home because it's cute, and it's it's a great way for me to market our company's products, because I carry around this cute little 3D printer in the car, and I can do demonstrations and workshops, and it. The Cube is a great machine. It's very reliable, and it allows me to give people a real view of they can actually see it making things, and that's quite powerful. But I think that, you know, I'm really interested in the whole concept of designing things and taking a CAD file and transferring it to making something. And so I've been fascinated by the work of Neil Gershenfeld at MIT and the Fab Lab network. And so I work with on a volunteer basis with the Fab Labs around the world. There's about 250 of them. And the impact that Fab Labs have on communities is in job creation and entrepreneurship and education. And there's just so many wonderful ways that Fab Labs allow people in the community to innovate and just do really creative things. And I don't know if we have time for a quick story, but there's a Fab Lab. The second Fab Lab was in India, and a kid in this very rural community came in, and their bull had died in their family, and they lived on a farm. Quite a problem when you own a farm. And the kids in the Fab Lab, who were high school dropouts, basically, pulled together parts that they had from an old motorcycle or something, and they made a mech bull, they called it. And the mech bull cost about $5,000 in parts, whereas to buy a tractor would have been $40,000. And it was so successful and worked so well, and the community liked it so much, this kid actually started a business selling these mech bulls. And I think that's the power of it. And Neil Gershenfeld says the power of the Fab Lab and digital fabrication is not technological, it's social, and it how it empowers communities.
Now, you founded Fab Lab Hub. Tell us a little bit about that.
We help groups that are trying to start Fab Labs. And so what I was finding is that people were coming to me and wanting help with, you know, how do I get started? And I particularly like the model in the MIT network, because there is consistent equipment, there is consistent technologies, there's consistent methodologies. It's open access, and it's open source, so that I could, you know, go to Barcelona. Our annual meeting this year is in Barcelona, and I could go into the lab in Barcelona, and really, it would be very familiar to me. I could go in and make something, and it would be consistent with the labs in Baltimore, for example. So the Fab Lab Hub helps people. We give them information and tools to help get started. Everything from which equipment should I buy to how do I get funding, or how do I convince my board of directors or my administration to support us. And we just did an Indiegogo project where we're helping makers in wheelchairs, and we're getting some 3D printing equipment for a college student in Maine named Mike Norton, and with one finger, he has designed these wheelchair people, and he puts them on pins and buttons, and they are the coolest creatures. I mean, there's a wounded warrior with a machine gun, and there's a king with a sword, and there's a couple, a bride and a groom, and there is a pot smoker. I mean, there's just a wide range of people. It's very cute. And we're going to help him take those and 3D print them as figures. And his mom contacted me. I had produced a digital fabrication conference in Portland, Maine last year. And they came to the conference, and she said, our heads are spinning with the possibilities of how all of these digital technologies are going to be able to improve Mike's life in the future.
Wow.
And the other recipient is a kid he's not a kid really, he's an adult but I think of him as a kid because he has so much energy and is so enthusiastic. He's in Denver, and he is creating a robotic arm, and he's 3D printing the brackets and connecting it to his wheelchair. And he wants this robotic arm to be controlled by head movements. And we were able to get him the robotic arm that he wants, and also some software and some help. And actually, my company was enchanted by him. And our founder, Dr. Paul Christensen, is going to help work with him and see what we can do to speed that up for him.
We've been talking with Sarah Barzer. She is an expert in the area of 3D printing, and as she told us, while we're probably a ways off from being able to walk up to the Star Trek-type computer and say, Earl Grey hot, we do have folks that are using 3D printing in remarkable ways. Sarah, thank you so much for being here with us on The Promise of Tomorrow.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Okay. As we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Yes, I say. John Barrymore. A man isn't old. until his regrets take the place of his dreams.